From the studios of Boise State Public Radio News, I'm Gemma Gaudette, and you're listening to Idaho Matters. Author Cheryl Head is known for her page-turning novels, but her newest book, Time's Undoing, is likely her most personal yet. She's joining us today to talk more about her outrage over the murder of George Floyd in 2020, which compelled her to write her latest novel. I want to welcome her to the program. Hi, Cheryl.
Hi, Gemma. So nice to be with you. Thanks for the invitation.
Our pleasure. So, Cheryl, before we dive into the book itself, can we go back to May of 2020? This is when the murder of George Floyd happened. You know, we're all home inside due to the pandemic. And I think it was it was this time where no one could turn away from it, like I think many of us had been able to do in the past. And I'm curious about that impact it had on you.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. So you set the stage very well. So we'd been kind of hunkered down for a couple of months. I'd just gotten over the daily fear that I was going to die from COVID, but you know, I'm dealing with the reality being stuck at home and reading the newspapers, listening to lots of media, you know, that kind of thing. And then the George Floyd murder case comes up. And I don't know if it's because I had the time and the focus, but such intense sadness and outrage about that incident. And it was that day that I decided, after literally walking through the house, kind of yelling out loud, that the next day I was going to write the story of my own grandfather's death in Birmingham, Alabama, after being shot by police officers. It was that moment.
And you know, that anger, that outrage that you felt, as you just mentioned, I mean, all of a sudden, here you are examining your own family's history. Why do you think at that point was it so important for you to not just, you know, think about this part of your family history, but to put pen to paper and write about it?
Yeah, great question. It really gave me permission to write the story. I've been talking to my mother, 20 years about writing this story. But it was one in which we had few details, lots of anger, lots of sadness and trauma in my family, but very few details about his homicide in Birmingham, Alabama, in Jim Crow Birmingham, Alabama, I should say, 1929. Right. And so the Floyd case just gave me the permission as a writer, I think, to say, Cheryl, you're going to write this from your imagination. You're going to write this from the few facts you have. You're going to not be daunted by the lack of detail that you have with this story. You're going to make it real, because these serial incidents of murders of Black men by police officers are real. And this is the time to tell the story that these are not isolated incidents, but ones that have happened systemically over the decades and over centuries in America.
So let's talk about the novel itself, because it is there are two timelines. So so why decide to tell it in that way? So you've got the setting of, and we should note, as you said, you've used your imagination. So you are telling the story of your family, yet it is a work of fiction. But with that said, tell us about these, you know, two timelines, present day and then almost 100 years before that.
Yes. Well, I know it was an old story, so I wanted to have resonance for modern audiences for young audiences, the folks who have been involved, for instance, in the Black Lives Matter protests and demonstrations. So I thought I needed a contemporary protagonist, someone younger who would want to investigate the details of this kind of unsolved murder 90 years before. So that took me off on the track of conceptualizing young Megan McKenzie, a newspaper journalist, who in the case of the novel, her grandfather has been killed by Birmingham, Alabama police. And she convinces her editorial team at the Detroit Free Press to allow her to go to Birmingham to try to pull together the threads of details she knew about the case so she could report on it in the context of Black Lives Matter. And then, of course, I wanted to be able to sprinkle the story with the details and the emotions and the senses and the the feelings that I had about my own grandfather's homicide, using the memories from my mom and my grandmother mm-hmm. and my aunt to weave together this narrative that showed daily life for Robert Harrington, that's my grandfather's name, in Birmingham, and to paint this journey of his work in Birmingham, and then that led to his demise because of his some of his own flaws, his pomposity. He was kind of a flamboyant man. My grandmother always described him as such, and how his being in the wrong place at the wrong time as a black man in Jim Crow South led to his demise.
Why was it important to you in the book to really examine the Black Lives Matter movement? I mean, as you mentioned, you know, you wanted to have this present day character, but to really, you know, delve into, I think, the issues that created the Black Lives Matter movement.
You know, Black Lives Matter, the movement has kind of fallen away from our everyday consciousness, but I think it did such a service for folks in America to think about the systemic racism that kind of pervades a lot of our institutions. I am not, I should say this, I'm not pro-police. I've had a police officer in my family. My sister was a police officer in Detroit. But I do think it's time for us to look at the practices of these institutions and to be aware of the historical context of these cultures and how they come to repeat over and over again these historic wrongs. So, I mean, I guess that was the outrage, you know, driving that part of the story. I want it also for young readers, the ones we hear about who say, I'm just sick and tired of this happening. We all are, you know, this kind of these serial incidents of excessive force by police. But I wanted to really give it some context so that we can look for solutions and not just have the outrage that we're going to have yet again, because these things are not going to stop without some change in the institutions.
Well, and I think it's very interesting what you said about, I think sometimes there's this idea that if you speak up and say something about, you know, the culture of an organization, right? The systemic culture of an organization, in particular law enforcement, that all of a sudden you're anti-law enforcement.
Right.
And in a way, I almost want to push back on that and say, well, no, maybe it's because you see the value of law enforcement, of police. But we also have to examine every institution, right?
That's absolutely right. And so, I spoke to some of my, you know, police officer writing friends, white men. I said, the story's about this. I want to paint a picture that is an accurate picture. And they were very supportive and very helpful in me striking the right tone. I think it's this whole thing about us hiding pieces of our history because it might somehow harm our psyches. You know, we need to have context for why we are in the situation we are in now, why our current culture of divisiveness and despair and suspiciousness of each other exists. I think these kinds of stories help us to begin and continue what is a long conversation, I think, about racial healing and social justice in America.
Well, and the generational trauma, right?
Yes,
that comes along with it. In particular, if you don't talk about your history.
Absolutely. All of our history, you know? I am as patriotic as anybody you want. I'm incensed when the American flag is being used by the extremists to be part of their cause. I love this country, but I also want to be able to give this country's constructive criticisms about the institutions that don't work. At the same time, loving this and understanding the ideals of the United States. This, for a Black woman, this is no other place I want to be, but I want also for us to be at our best.
And, you know, I think in the book, what's interesting as well is when you have these two timelines, you can, as you're reading it, you can see that it's like, oh my gosh, here we are 90 years in between, and we can focus on, well, not much has changed, or we can say, well, there is still work to be done, but but yeah. progress has been made. Did you make a conscious decision to write like that?
Yes, I made the. My friends call me Pollyannish, but I accept that term.
Oh my gosh, I get the same thing.
I consciously wanted to describe that there is community of like-minded people who want things to change for the better in this country. And that's why you'll see in this book, not just the focus on hate and the hate crimes that exist and the people who have done wrong and continue to do wrong, but in the power of community to kind of sustain a positive culture in this country, and the power that community has to make changes and support each other. I hope I did that. This is a book that not only looks at police excessive force and hate crimes and the ubiquity of hate crimes and hate groups in America, but also one that looks at Black joy and Black love and how people have managed to thrive, even under the worst conditions, to live useful and positive lives.
Mm. What do you hope the takeaway is for a reader when they read this book?
Mm-hmm. I hope a reader will say, wow, I never thought about all of this before. I never kind of understood the day-to-day world of the Jim Crow South. I never really thought about how those lives and that culture and those laws have progressed and made America better. But at the same time, the kinds of incidents of hatred and prejudice and bias that we saw 100 years ago still exist in America today, and what can we do about it? And I hope they will see that there is power in resiliency, and give some thought to how can I be part of the community that makes changes for the United States of America.
Well, Cheryl, it has been so lovely to talk with you. I really appreciate you taking the time today.
I loved your questions, Gemma. Thank you so much.
Oh, absolutely. We've been speaking with author Cheryl Head, talking about her newest novel, Time's Undoing. It is available now. Thanks so much for listening to Idaho Matters. Boise State Public Radio and Idaho Matters are members of the NPR Network. It's an independent coalition of public media podcasters. You can find more shows in the network wherever you get your podcasts. I'm Gemma Gaudette. We'll see you tomorrow.
Race might be a hot topic right now, but for so many of us, talking about race is nothing new. On the Code Switch podcast from NPR, we go beyond the headlines and we go deep. Listen now.